Jack looked back up at the photograph. The long, dimpled plain, the low, brown mountains. The Territories. That was right. That was its name. They have magic, like we have physics, right? An agrarian monarchy. Modern weapons to the right guys over there. Uncle Morgan plotting. His father answering, putting on the brakes. We have to be careful about the way we go in there, partner. Remember, we owe them, by which I mean we really owe them. The Territories, he said to Speedy, tasting the name in his mouth as much as asking a question. Air like the best wine in a rich man's cellar. Soft rain. That's the place, son. You've been there, Speedy? Jack asked, fervently hoping for a straightforward answer. But Speedy frustrated him, as Jack had almost known he would. The custodian smiled at him, and this time it was a real smile, not just a subliminal flare of warmth. After a moment, Speedy said, "Hell, I never been outside these United States, Traveling Jack. Not even in the war. Never got any farther than Texas and Alabama." "How do you know about the Territories?" The name was just beginning to fit his mouth.
"Man like me, he hear all kinds of stories. Stories about two-headed parrots. Men that fly with their own wings. Men who turn into wolves. Stories about queens. Sick queens.
Magic like we have physics, right? Angels and werewolves. I've heard stories about werewolves," Jack said. "They're even in cartoons. That doesn't mean anything, Speedy."
"Probably it don't. But I heard that if a man pulls a radish out of the ground, another man half a mile away will be able to smell that radish. The air so sweet and clear."
"But angels?"
"Men with wings."
"And sick queens," Jack said, meaning it as a joke. "Man, this is some dumb place you make up, broom jockey." But the instant he spoke the words, he felt sick himself. He had remembered the black eye of a gull fixing him with his own mortality as it yanked a clam from its shell, and he could hear hustlin' bustlin' Uncle Morgan asking if Jack could put Queen Lily on the line. Queen of the bees, Queen Lily Cavanaugh.
"Yeah," Speedy said softly. "Troubles everywhere, son. Sick queen, maybe dying. Dying, son. And a world or two waiting out there, just waiting to see if anyone can save her."
Jack stared at him, open-mouthed, feeling more or less as if the custodian had just kicked him in the stomach. Save her? Save his mother? The panic started to flood toward him once again. How could he save her? And did all this crazy talk mean that she really was dying back there in that room?
"You got a job, Traveling Jack," Speedy told him. "A job that ain't gonna let you go. And that's the Lord's truth. I wish it was different."
"I don't know what you're talking about," Jack said. His breath seemed to be trapped in a hot little pocket situated at the base of his neck. He looked into another corner of the small red room, and in the shadow saw a battered guitar propped against the wall. Beside it lay the neat tube of a thin, rolled-up mattress. Speedy slept next to his guitar.
"I wonder," Speedy said. "There comes times, you know what I mean, you know more than you think you know. One hell of a lot more."
"But I don't..." Jack began, and then pulled himself up short. He had just remembered something. Now he was even more frightened. Another chunk of the past had rushed out at him, demanding his attention. Instantly he was filmed with perspiration, and his skin felt very cold, as if he had been misted by a fine spray from a hose. This memory was what he had fought to repress yesterday morning, standing before the elevators, pretending that his bladder was not about to burst.
"Didn't I say it was time for a little refreshment?" Speedy asked, reaching down to push aside a loose floorboard.
Jack again saw two ordinary-looking men trying to push his mother into a car. Above them a huge tree dipped scalloped fronds over the automobile's roof. Speedy gently extracted a pint bottle from the gap between the floorboards. The glass was dark green and the fluid inside looked black.
"This gonna help you, son. Just a little taste, all you need. Send you some new places. Help you get started finding that job I told you about.
I can't stay, Speedy, Jack blurted out, now in a desperate hurry to get back to the Alhambra. The old man visibly checked the surprise in his face, then slid the bottle back under the loose floorboard. Jack was already on his feet. I'm worried, he said. About your mom? Jack nodded, moving backward toward the open door.
Then you better settle your mind and go see she's all right. You can come back here any time, Traveling Jack.
Okay, the boy said, and then hesitated before running outside. I think I remember when we met before.
Nah, my brain's got twisted, Speedy said, shaking his head and waving his hands back and forth before him. You had it right. We never met before last week. Get on back to your mom and set your mind at ease.
Jack sprinted out the door and ran through the dimensionless sunlight to the wide arch leading to the street. Above it, he could see the letters DLROWNUFAIDACRA outlined against the sky. At night, colored bulbs would spell out the park's name in both directions. Dust puffed up beneath his Nikes. Jack pushed himself against his own muscles, making the move faster and harder, so that by the time he burst out through the arch, he felt almost as though he were flying. 1976. Jack had been puttering his way up Rodeo Drive on an afternoon in June, July, some afternoon in the drought season, but before that time of the year when everybody started worrying about brush fires in the hills. Now he could not even remember where he had been going. A friend's house? It had not been an errand of any urgency. He had, Jack remembered, just reached the point where he no longer thought of his father in every unoccupied second. For many months after Philip Sawyer's death in a hunting accident, his shade, his loss, had sped toward Jack at a bruising speed whenever the boy was least prepared to meet it. Jack was only 7, but he knew that part of his childhood had been stolen from him. His 6-year-old self now seemed impossibly naive and thoughtless, but he had learned to trust his mother's strength. Formless and savage threats no longer seemed to conceal themselves in dark corners, closets with half-open doors, shadowy streets, empty rooms. The events of that aimless summer afternoon in 1976 had murdered this temporary peace. After it, Jack slept with his light on for 6 months. Nightmares roiled his sleep. The car pulled across the street just a few houses up from the Sawyer's white 3-story colonial. It had been a green car, and that was all that Jack had known about it, except that it was not a Mercedes. Mercedes was the only kind of automobile he knew by sight. The man at the wheel had rolled down his window and smiled at Jack. The boy's first thought had been that he knew this man. The man had known Phil Sawyer and wanted just to say hello to his son. Somehow that was conveyed by the man's smile, which was easy and unforced and familiar. Another man leaned forward in the passenger seat and peered toward Jack through blind man glasses, round and so dark they were nearly black. This second man was wearing a pure white suit. The driver let his smile speak for him a moment longer. Then he said, "Sonny, do you know how we get to the Beverly Hills Hotel?" So he was a stranger, after all. Jack experienced an odd little flicker of disappointment. He pointed straight up the street. The hotel was right up there, close enough so that his father had been able to walk to breakfast meetings in the loggia. "Straight ahead?" the driver asked, still smiling. Jack nodded. "You're a pretty smart little fella," the man told him, and the other man chuckled. "Any idea of how far up it is?" Jack shook his head. "Couple of blocks, maybe?" "Yeah." He had begun to get uncomfortable. The driver was still smiling, but now the smile looked bright and hard and empty. And the passenger's chuckle had been wheezy and damp, as if he were sucking on something wet. "5, maybe? 6? What do you say?" "About 5 or 6, I guess," Jack said, stepping backward. "Well, I sure do want to thank you, little fella," the driver said. "You don't happen to like candy, do you?" He extended a closed fist through the window, turned it palm up, and opened his fingers. "A Tootsie Roll." "It's yours. Take it." Jack tentatively stepped forward, hearing in his mind the words of 1,000 warnings involving strange men and candy. But this man was still in his car. If he tried anything, Jack would be half a block away before the man got his door open. And to not take it somehow seemed a breach of civility. Jack took another step nearer. He looked at the man's eyes, which were blue and as bright and hard as his smile. Jack's instincts told him to lower his hand and walk away. He let his hand drift an inch or two nearer the Tootsie Roll. Then he made a little stabbing peck at it with his fingers. The driver's hand clamped around Jack's, and the passenger in blind man glasses laughed out loud. Astonished, Jack stared into the eyes of the man gripping his hand and saw them start to change, thought he saw them start to change, from blue to yellow. But later they were yellow. The man in the other seat pushed his door open and trotted around the back of the car. He was wearing a small gold cross in the lapel of his silk suit coat. Jack pulled frantically away, but the driver smiled brightly, emptily, and held him fast. "No!" Jack yelled. "Help!" The man in dark glasses opened the rear door on Jack's side. "Help me!" Jack screamed. The man holding him began to squeeze him down into a shape that would fit into the open door. Jack bucked, still yelling, but the man effortlessly tightened his hold. Jack struck at his hands, then tried to push the hands off him. With horror, he realized that what he felt beneath his fingers was not skin. He twisted his head and saw that clamped to his side and protruding from the black sleeve was a hard, pinching thing like a claw or a jointed talon. Jack screamed again. From up the street came a loud voice. "Hey, stop messing with that boy! You, leave that boy alone!" Jack gasped with relief and twisted as hard as he could in the man's arms. Running toward them from the end of the block was a tall, thin, black man still shouting. The man holding him dropped Jack to the sidewalk and took off around the back of the car. The front door on one of the houses behind Jack slammed open. Another witness. "Move, move," said the driver, already stepping on the accelerator. White suit jumped back into the passenger seat, and the car spun its wheels and squealed diagonally across Rodeo Drive, barely missing a long white Clinet driven by a suntanned man in tennis whites. The Clinet's horn blared. Jack picked himself up off the sidewalk. He felt dizzy. A bald man in a tan safari suit appeared beside him and said, "Who were they? Did you get their names?" Jack shook his head. "How do you feel? We ought to call the police." "I want to sit down," Jack said, and the man backed away a step. "You want me to call the police?" he asked, and Jack shook his head. "I can't believe this," the man said. "Do you live around here? I've seen you before, haven't I?"
"I'm Jack Sawyer. My house is just down there."
"The White House," the man said, nodding. "You're Lily Cavanaugh's kid. I'll walk you home if you like."
"Where's the other man?" Jack asked him. "The black man, the one who was shouting."
He took an uneasy step away from the man in the safari suit. Apart from the two of them, the street was empty. Lester Speedy Parker had been the man running toward him. Speedy had saved his life back then, Jack realized, and ran all the harder toward the hotel. "You get any breakfast?" his mother asked him, spilling a cloud of smoke out of her mouth. She wore a scarf over her hair like a turban, and with her hair hidden that way, her face looked bony and vulnerable to Jack. A half inch of cigarette smoldered between her second and third fingers, and when she saw him glance at it, she snubbed it out in the ashtray on her dressing table.
No, not really," he said, hovering in the door of her bedroom. "Give me a clear yes or no," she said, turning back to the mirror. "The ambiguity is killing me."
Her mirror wrist and mirror hand, applying the makeup to Lily's face, looked stick thin.
"No," he said. "Well, hang on for a second, and when your mother has made herself beautiful, she'll take you downstairs and buy you whatever your heart desires." "Okay," he said. "It just seems so depressing being there all alone." "I swear, what you have to be depressed about..."
She leaned forward and inspected her face in the mirror.
"I don't suppose you'd mind waiting in the living room, Jackie. I'd rather do this alone. Tribal secrets."
Jack wordlessly turned away and wandered back into the living room. When the telephone rang, he jumped about a foot.
"Should I get that?" he called out. "Thank you," her cool voice came back.
Jack picked up the receiver and said hello.
"Hey, kid, I finally got you," said Uncle Morgan Sloat. "What in the world is going on in your mama's head? Jesus, we could have a real situation here if somebody doesn't start paying attention to details. Is she there? Tell her she has to talk to me. I don't care what she says, she has to talk to me. Trust me, kiddo.
Jack let the phone dangle in his hand. He wanted to hang up, to get in the car with his mother and drive to another hotel in another state. He did not hang up. He called out, "Mom, Uncle Morgan's on the phone. He says you have to talk to him."
She was silent for a moment, and he wished he could have seen her face. Finally she said,
"I'll take it in here, Jackie."
Jack already knew what he was going to have to do. His mother gently shut her bedroom door. He heard her walking back to the dressing table. She picked up the telephone in her bedroom.
"Okay, Jackie," she called through the door.
"Okay," he called back. Then he put the telephone back to his ear and covered the mouthpiece with his hand so that no one would hear him breathing.
"Great stunt, Lily," Uncle Morgan said. "Terrific. If you were still in pictures, we could probably get a little mileage out of this. Kind of a why-has-this-actress-disappeared thing. But don't you think it's time you started acting like a rational person again?"
"How did you find me?" she asked.
"You think you're hard to find? Give me a break, Lily. I want you to get your ass back to New York. It's time you stopped running away."
"Is that what I'm doing, Morgan?"
"You don't exactly have all the time in the world, Lily, and I don't have enough time to waste to chase you all over New England. Hey, hold on, your kid never hung up his phone."
"Of course he did."
Jack's heart had stopped some seconds earlier.
"Get off the line, kid," Morgan Sloat's voice said to him.
"Don't be ridiculous, Sloat," his mother said.
"I'll tell you what's ridiculous, lady. You holing up in some seedy resort when you ought to be in the hospital. That's ridiculous. Jesus, don't you know we have about 1 million business decisions to make? I care about your son's education, too, and it's a damn good thing I do. You seem to have given up on that."
"I don't want to talk to you anymore," Lily said.
"You don't want to, but you have to. I'll come up there and put you in a hospital by force if I have to. We got to make arrangements, Lily. You own half of the company I'm trying to run, and Jack gets your half after you're gone. I want to make sure Jack's taken care of. And if you think that taking care of Jack is what you're doing up there in goddamn New Hampshire, then you're a lot sicker than you know."
"What do you want, Sloat?" Lily asked in a tired voice.
"You know what I want. I want everybody taken care of. I want what's fair. I'll take care of Jack, Lily. I'll give him $50,000 a year. You think about that, Lily. I'll see he goes to a good college. You can't even keep him in school."
"Noble Sloat," his mother said.
"Do you think that's an answer? Lily, you need help, and I'm the only one offering."
"What's your cut, Sloat?" his mother asked.
"You know damn well. I get what's fair. I get what's coming to me. Your interest in Sawyer and Sloat, I worked my ass off for that company, and it ought to be mine. We could get the paperwork done in the morning, Lily, and then concentrate on getting you taken care of."
"Like Tommy Woodbine was taken care of," she said. "Sometimes I think you and Phil were too successful, Morgan. Sawyer and Sloat was more manageable before you got into real estate investments and production deals. Remember when you had only a couple of deadbeat comics and a half-dozen hopeful actors and screenwriters as clients? I liked life better before the megabugs."
"Manageable? Who are you kidding?" Uncle Morgan yelled. "You can't even manage yourself!"
Then he made an effort to calm himself.
"And I'll forget you mentioned Tom Woodbine. That was beneath even you, Lily."
"I'm going to hang up now, Sloat. Stay away from here, and stay away from Jack."
"You are going into a hospital, Lily, and this running around is going to—" His mother hung up in the middle of Uncle Morgan's sentence.
Jack gently put down his own receiver. Then he took a couple of steps closer to the window as if not to be seen anywhere near the living room phone. Only silence came from the closed bedroom.
"Mom," he said.
"Yes, Jackie?"
He heard a slight wobble in her voice.
"You okay? Is everything all right?"
"Me? Sure."
Her footsteps came softly to the door, which cracked open. Their eyes met, his blue to her blue. Lily swung the door all the way open. Again their eyes met for a moment of uncomfortable intensity.
"Of course everything's all right. Why wouldn't it be?"
Their eyes disengaged. Knowledge of some kind had passed between them. But what? Jack wondered if she knew that he had listened to her conversation. Then he thought that the knowledge they had just shared was, for the first time, the fact of her illness.
"Well,"
he said, embarrassed now. His mother's disease, that great, unspeakable subject, grew obscenely large between them.
I don't know exactly. Uncle Morgan seemed...
He shrugged. Lily shivered, and Jack came to another great recognition. His mother was afraid, at least as afraid as he was. She plugged a cigarette in her mouth and snapped open her lighter, another stabbing look from her deep eyes.
"Don't pay any attention to that pest, Jack. I'm just irritated because it really doesn't seem that I'll ever be able to get away from him. Your Uncle Morgan likes to bully me."
She exhaled gray smoke.
"I'm afraid that I don't have much appetite for breakfast anymore. Why don't you take yourself downstairs and have a real breakfast this time?"
"Come with me," he said.
"I'd like to be alone for a while, Jack. Try to understand that."
"Try to understand that. Trust me. These things that grown-ups said, meaning something else entirely."
"I'll be more companionable when you come back," she said. "That's a promise."
And what she was really saying was, "I want to scream. I can't take any more of this. Get out! Get out!"
"Should I bring you anything?"
She shook her head, smiling toughly at him, and he had to leave the room, though he no longer had any stomach for breakfast either. Jack wandered down the corridor to the elevators. Once again, there was only one place to go. But this time he knew it before he ever reached the gloomy lobby and the ashen, censorious desk clerk. Speedy Parker was not in the small, red-painted shack of an office. He was not out on the long pier, in the arcade, where the two old boys were back playing skee-ball as if it were a war they both knew they would lose. He was not in the dusty vacancy beneath the roller coaster. Jack Sawyer turned aimlessly in the harsh sunlight, looking down the empty avenues and deserted public places of the park. Jack's fear tightened itself up a notch. Suppose something had happened to Speedy. It was impossible, but what if Uncle Morgan had found out about Speedy? Found out what, though? And had... Jack mentally saw the wild child van careening around a corner, grinding its gears and picking up speed. He jerked himself into motion, hardly knowing which way he meant to go. In the bright panic of his mood, he saw Uncle Morgan running past a row of distorting mirrors, turned by them into a series of monstrous and deformed figures. Horns grew on his bald brow, a hump flowered between his fleshy shoulders, his wide fingers became shovels. Jack veered sharply off to the right and found himself moving toward an oddly shaped, almost round building of white slat-like boards. From within it, he suddenly heard a rhythmic tap, tap, tap. The boy ran toward the sound, a wrench hitting a pipe, a hammer striking an anvil, a noise of work. In the midst of the slats, he found a doorknob and pulled open a fragile slat door. Jack went forward into striped darkness, and the sound grew louder. The darkness changed form around him, altered its dimensions. He stretched out his hands and touched canvas. This slid aside. Instantly, glowing yellow light fell about him.
"Traveling Jack," said Speedy's voice.
Jack turned toward the voice and saw the custodian seated on the ground beside a partially dismantled merry-go-round. He held a wrench in his hand, and before him a white horse with a foamy mane lay impaled by a long silver stake from pommel to belly. Speedy gently put the wrench on the ground.
"Are you ready to talk now, son?" he asked.
Chapter 4 Jack Goes Over.
"Yes, I'm ready now," Jack said in a perfectly calm voice, and then burst into tears.
"Say, Traveling Jack," Speedy said, dropping his wrench and coming to him. "Say, son, take her easy. Take her easy now."
But Jack couldn't take her easy. Suddenly it was too much, all of it, too much. And it was cry or just sink under a great wave of blackness, a wave which no bright streak of gold could illuminate. The tears hurt, but he sensed the terror would kill him if he did not cry it out.
"You do your weeping, Traveling Jack," Speedy said, and put his arms around him.
Jack put his hot, swollen face against Speedy's thin shirt, smelling the man's smell, something like Old Spice, something like cinnamon, something like books that no one has taken out of the library in a long time. Good smells. Comforting smells. He groped his arms around Speedy. His palms felt the bones in Speedy's back, close to the surface, hardly covered by scant meat.
"You weep if it puts you easy again," Speedy said, rocking him. "Sometimes it does, I know. Speedy knows how far you been, Traveling Jack, and how far you got to go, and how you tired. So you weep if it puts you easy."
Jack barely understood the words, only the sounds of them, soothing and calming. "My mother's really sick," he said at last, against Speedy's chest. "I think she came here to get away from my father's old partner, Mr. Morgan Sloat."
He sniffed mightily, let go of Speedy, stepped back, and rubbed at his swollen eyes with the heels of his hands. He was surprised at his lack of embarrassment. Always before, his tears had disgusted and shamed him. It was almost like peeing your pants. Was that because his mother had always been so tough? He supposed that was part of it, all right. Lily Cavanaugh had little use for tears.
"But that ain't the only reason she come here, was it?"
"No," Jack said in a low voice. "I think she came here to die?" His voice rose impossibly on the last word, making a squeak like an unoiled hinge.
"Maybe," Speedy said, looking at Jack steadily. "And maybe you here to save her. Her and a woman just like her."
"Who?" Jack said through numb lips.
He knew who. He didn't know her name, but he knew who. "The Queen," Speedy said. "Her name is Laura Deloessian, and she is the Queen of the Territories." "Help me," Speedy grunted. "Catch old Silver Lady right under the tail. You be taking liberties with the lady, but I guess she ain't gonna mind if you're helping me get her back where she belongs."
"Is that what you call her, Silver Lady?"
"Yeah, Bob," Speedy said, grinning, showing perhaps a dozen teeth, top and bottom. "All carousel horses is named. Don't you know that? Catch on, Traveling Jack."
Jack reached under the white horse's wooden tail and locked his fingers together. Grunting, Speedy wrapped his big brown hands around the lady's forelegs. Together they carried the wooden horse over to the canted dish of the carousel, the pole pointing down, its far end sinister with layers of Quaker State oil.
"Little to the left," Speedy gasped. "Yeah, now peg her, Traveling Jack, peg her down good."
They seated the pole and then stood back, Jack panting, Speedy grinning and gasping wheezily. The black man armed sweat from his brow and then turned his grin on Jack.
"My, ain't we cool?"
"If you say so," Jack answered, smiling.
"I say so, oh yes."
Speedy reached into his back pocket and pulled out the dark green pint bottle. He unscrewed the cap, drank, and for a moment Jack felt a weird certainty. He could see through Speedy. Speedy had become transparent, as ghostly as one of the spirits on the Topper show, which they showed on one of the indie stations out in L.A. Speedy was disappearing. Disappearing, Jack thought, or going someplace else. But that was another nutty thought. It made no sense at all. Then Speedy was as solid as ever. It had just been a trick his eyes had played. A momentary, no, it wasn't. For just a second he almost wasn't here. Hallucination. Speedy was looking shrewdly at him. He started to hold the bottle out to Jack, then shook his head a little. He recapped it instead and then slid it into his back pocket again. He turned to study the Silver Lady back in her place on the carousel, now needing only to have her post bolted securely into place. He was smiling.
"We just as cool as we can be, Traveling Jack."
"Speedy, all of 'em is named," Speedy said, walking slowly around the canted dish of the carousel, his footfalls echoing in the high building. Overhead, in the shadowy crisscross of the beams, a few barn swallows cooed softly. Jack followed him.
Silver Lady, Midnight, this here roan is Scout, this mare's Ella Speed."
The black man threw back his head and sang, startling the barn swallows into flight.
"Ella Speed was having her loving fun. Let me tell you what old Bill Martin done. Whoo, look at him fly."
He laughed, but when he turned to Jack, he was serious again.
"You like to take a shot at saving your mother's life, Jack? Hers and the life of that other woman I told you about?"
"I don't know how," he meant to say, but a voice inside, a voice which came from that same previously locked room from which the memory of the two men and the attempted kidnapping had come that morning, rose up powerfully. "You do know. You might need Speedy to get you started, but you do know, Jack. You do." He knew that voice so very well. It was his father's voice. "I will if you tell me how," he said, his voice rising and falling unevenly. Speedy crossed to the room's far wall, a great circular shape made of narrow slatted boards painted with a primitive but wildly energetic mural of dashing horses. To Jack, the wall looked like the pull-down lid of his father's roll-top desk, and that desk had been in Morgan Sloat's office the last time Jack and his mother had been there, he suddenly remembered. The thought brought a thin, milky anger with it. Speedy pulled out a gigantic ring of keys, picked thoughtfully through them, found the one he wanted, and turned it in a padlock. He pulled the lock out of the hasp, clicked it shut, and dropped it into one of his breast pockets. Then he shoved the entire wall back on its track. Gorgeously bright sunlight poured in, making Jack narrow his eyes. Water ripples danced benignly across the ceiling. They were looking at the magnificent sea view the riders of the Arcadia Fun World Carousel got each time Silver Lady and Midnight and Scout carried them past the east side of the round carousel building. A light sea breeze pushed Jack's hair back from his forehead.
"Best to have sunlight if we're going to talk about this," Speedy said. "Come on over here, Traveling Jack, and I'll tell you what I can, which ain't all I know. God forbid you should ever have to get all of that."
Speedy talked in his soft voice. It was as mellow and soothing to Jack as leather that has been well broken in. Jack listened, sometimes frowning, sometimes gaping.
"You know those things you call the daydreams?"
Jack nodded.
"Those things ain't dreams, Traveling Jack. Not daydreams, not night dreams either. That place is a real place. Real enough, anyway. It's a lot different from here, but it's real."
"Speedy, my mom says..."
"Never mind that right now. She don't know about the territories. But in a way she do know about 'em. Because your daddy, he knew. And this other man..."
"Morgan Sloat?"
"Yeah, I reckon. He knows, too."
Then, cryptically, Speedy added,
"I know who he is over there, too, don't I? Ooh."
"The picture in your office. Not Africa?"
"Not Africa."
"Not a trick?"
"Not a trick."
"And my father went to this place?" he asked. But his heart already knew the answer. It was an answer that clarified too many things not to be true. But true or not, Jack wasn't sure how much of it he wanted to believe. Magic lands? Sick queens? It made him uneasy. It made him uneasy about his mind. Hadn't his mother told him over and over again when he was small that he shouldn't confuse his daydreaming with what was really real? She had been very stern about that, and she had frightened Jack a little. Perhaps, he thought now, she had been frightened herself. Could she have lived with Jack's father for so long and not known something? Jack didn't think so. Maybe, he thought, she didn't know very much. Just enough to scare her. Going nuts. That's what she was talking about. People who couldn't tell the difference between real things and make-believe were going nuts. But his father had known a different truth, hadn't he? Yes. He and Morgan Sloat.
"They have magic like we have physics, right?" "Your father went often, yes. And this other man, Groat."
"Sloat."
"Yeah, Bob, him. He went too. Only your dad, Jackie, he went to see and learn. The other fella, he just went to plunder him out of fortune.
Did Morgan Sloat kill my Uncle Tommy? Jack asked.
Don't know nothing about that. You just listen to me, Traveling Jack, because time is short. If you really think this fella Sloat is going to turn up here...
He sounded awful mad, Jack said. Just thinking about Uncle Morgan showing up in Arcadia Beach made him feel nervous.
Then time is shorter than ever, because maybe he wouldn't mind so bad if your mother died, and his twinner is sure hoping that Queen Laura dies.
Twinner?
There's people in this world have got twinners in the territories, Speedy said. Not many, because there's a lot less people over there, maybe only one for every 100,000 over here. But twinners can go back and forth the easiest.
This queen, she's my mother's... her twinner?
Yeah, seems like she is.
But my mother never...
No, she never has. No reason.
My father had a twinner?
Yes, indeed he did. A fine man.
Jack wet his lips. What a crazy conversation this was. Twinners and territories. When my father died over here, did his twinner die over there?
Yeah. Not exactly the same time, but almost.
Speedy?
What?
Have I got a twinner in the territories?
And Speedy looked at him so seriously that Jack felt a deep chill go up his back.
Not you, son. There's only one of you. You special. And this fella, Smoot.
Sloat, Jack said, smiling a little.
Yeah, whatever. He knows it. That be one of the reasons he be coming up here soon, and one of the reasons you got to get moving.
Why? Jack burst out. What good can I do if it's cancer? If it's cancer and she's here instead of in some clinic, it's because there's no way. If she's here, see, it means... The tears threatened again, and he swallowed them back frantically. It means it must be all through her.
All through her. Yes, that was another truth his heart knew. The truth of her accelerating weight loss. The truth of the brown shadows under her eyes. All through her.
But please, God, hey, God, please, man, she's my mother. I mean, he finished in a thick voice, what good is that daydream place gonna do?
I think we had enough jaw chin for now, Speedy said. Just believe this here, Traveling Jack. I'd never tell you you ought to go if you couldn't do us some good. But get quiet, Traveling Jack. Can't talk no more till I show you some of what I mean. Wouldn't do no good. Come on.
Speedy put an arm around Jack's shoulders and led him around the carousel dish. They went out the door together and walked down one of the amusement park's deserted byways. On their left was the Demon Dodge'em Cars building, now boarded up and shuttered. On their right was a series of booths, Pitch Till You Win, Famous Pier Pizza and Doughboys, the Rimfire Shooting Gallery, also boarded up, faded wild animals pranced across the boards, lions and tigers and bears, oh my. They reached the wide main street, which was called Boardwalk Avenue, in vague imitation of Atlantic City. Arcadia Fun World had a pier, but no real boardwalk. The arcade building was now 100 yards down to their left, and the arch marking the entrance to Arcadia Fun World about 200 yards down to their right. Jack could hear the steady, grinding thunder of the breaking waves, the lonely cries of the gulls. He looked at Speedy, meaning to ask him what now, what next. Could he mean any of it, or was it a cruel joke? But he said none of those things. Speedy was holding out the green glass bottle.
That, Jack began.
Takes you there, Speedy said. Lot of people who visit over there don't need nothing like this. But you ain't been there in a while, have you, Jackie?
No.
When had he last closed his eyes in this world and opened them in the magic world of the daydreams, that world with its rich, vital smells and its deep, transparent sky?
Last year? No, further back than that. California, after his father had died. He would have been about... Jack's eyes widened. 9 years old? That long? 3 years? It was frightening to think how quietly, how unobtrusively, those dreams, sometimes sweet, sometimes darkly unsettling, had slipped away, as if a large part of his imagination had died, painlessly and unannounced. He took the bottle from Speedy quickly, almost dropping it. He felt a little panicky. Some of the daydreams had been disturbing, yes, and his mother's carefully worded admonitions not to mix up reality and make-believe, in other words, don't go crazy, Jackie, old kid, old sock, okay, had been a little scary, yes. But he discovered now that he didn't want to lose that world after all. He looked in Speedy's eyes and thought, he knows it, too. Everything I just thought, he knows. Who are you, Speedy?
When you ain't been there for a while, you kind of forget how to get there on your own hook, Speedy said. He nodded at the bottle. That's why I got me some magic juice. This stuff is special.
Speedy spoke this last in tones that were almost reverential. Is it from there, the territories?
Nope. They got some magic right here, Traveling Jack. Not much, but a little. This here magic juice come from California.
Jack looked at him doubtfully.
Go on. Have you a little sip and see if you don't go traveling.
Speedy grinned.
Drink enough of that, you can go just about any place you want. You are looking at one who knows.
Geez, Speedy, but... He began to feel afraid. His mouth had gone dry, the sun seemed much too bright, and he could feel his pulse beat speeding up in his temples. There was a coppery taste under his tongue, and Jack thought that's how his magic juice will taste. Horrible.
If you get scared and want to come back, have another sip, Speedy said.
It'll come with me? The bottle, you promise? The thought of getting stuck there in that mystical other place while his mother was sick and sloat beset back here was awful.
I promise.
Okay. Jack brought the bottle to his lips, and then let it fall away a little. The smell was awful, sharp and rancid.
I don't want to, Speedy, he whispered.
Lester Parker looked at him, and his lips were smiling, but there was no smile in his eyes. They were stern, uncompromising, frightening. Jack thought of black eyes, eye of gull, eye of vortex. Terror swept through him. He held the bottle out to Speedy.
Can't you take it back?
He asked, and his voice came out in a strengthless whisper.
Please?
Speedy made no reply. He did not remind Jack that his mother was dying or that Morgan Sloat was coming. He didn't call Jack a coward, although he had never in his life felt so much like a coward, not even the time he had backed away from the high board at Camp Accomac and some of the other kids had booed him. Speedy merely turned around and whistled at a cloud. Now loneliness joined the terror, sweeping helplessly through him. Speedy had turned away from him. Speedy had shown him his back.
Okay, Jack said suddenly. Okay, if it's what you need me to do.
He raised the bottle again, and before he could have any second or third thoughts, he drank. The taste was worse than anything he had anticipated. He had had wine before, had even developed some taste for it. He especially liked the dry white wines his mother served with sole or snapper or swordfish, and this was something like wine. But at the same time it was a dreadful mockery of all the wines he had drunk before. The taste was high and sweet and rotten, not the taste of lively grapes but of dead grapes that had not lived well. As his mouth flooded with that horrible sweet purple taste, he could actually see those grapes, dull, dusty, obese, and nasty, crawling up a dirty stucco wall in a thick, syrupy sunlight that was silent except for the stupid buzz of many flies. He swallowed
and thin fire printed a snail trail down his throat. He closed his eyes, grimacing, his gorge threatening to rise. He did not vomit, although he believed that if he had eaten any breakfast, he would have done.
Speedy!
He opened his eyes, and further words died in his throat. He forgot about the need to sick up that horrible parody of wine. He forgot about his mother and Uncle Morgan and his father and almost everything else. Speedy was gone. The graceful arcs of the roller coaster against the sky were gone. Boardwalk Avenue was gone. He was someplace else now. He was
in the territories, Jack whispered,
his entire body crawling with a mad mixture of terror and exhilaration. He could feel the hair stirring on the nape of his neck, could feel a goofed-up grin pulling at the corners of his mouth.
Speedy, I'm here. My God, I'm here in the territories.
But wonder overcame him. He clapped a hand over his mouth and slowly turned in a complete circle, looking at this place to which Speedy's magic juice had brought him. The ocean was still there, but now it was a darker, richer blue, the truest indigo Jack had ever seen. For a moment he stood transfixed, the sea breeze blowing in his hair, looking at the horizon line where that indigo ocean met a sky the color of faded denim. That horizon line showed a faint but unmistakable curve. He shook his head, frowning, and turned the other way. Seagrass, high and wild and tangled, ran down from the headland where the round carousel building had been only a minute ago. The arcade pier was also gone, where it had been a wild tumble of granite blocks ran down to the ocean. The waves struck the lowest of these and ran into ancient cracks and channels with great hollow boomings. Foam as thick as whipped cream jumped into the clear air and was blown away by the wind. Abruptly, Jack seized his left cheek with his left thumb and forefinger. He pinched hard. His eyes watered, but nothing changed.
"It's real," he whispered.
And another wave boomed onto the headland, raising white curds of foam. Jack suddenly realized that Boardwalk Avenue was still here, after a fashion. A rutted cart track ran from the top of the headland, where Boardwalk Avenue had ended, at the entrance to the arcade, in what his mind persisted in thinking of as the real world, down to where he was standing, and then on to the north, just as Boardwalk Avenue ran north, becoming Arcadia Avenue after it passed under the arch at the border of Fun World. Seagrass grew up along the center of this track, but it had a bent and matted look that made Jack think that the track was still used, at least once in a while. He started north, still holding the green bottle in his right hand. It occurred to him that somewhere, in another world, Speedy was holding the cap that went on this bottle.
Did I disappear right in front of him? I suppose I must have. Jeez!
About 40 paces along the track, he came upon a tangle of blackberry bushes. Clustered amid the thorns were the fattest, darkest, most lush-looking blackberries he had ever seen. Jack's stomach, apparently over the indignity of the magic juice, made a loud goinging sound.
Blackberries? In September? Never mind.
After all that had happened today, and it was not yet 10 o'clock, sticking at blackberries in September seemed a little bit like refusing to take an aspirin after one has swallowed a doorknob. Jack reached in, picked a handful of berries, and tossed them into his mouth. They were amazingly sweet, amazingly good. Smiling, his lips had taken on a definite bluish cast. Thinking it quite possible that he had lost his mind, he picked another handful of berries, and then a third. He had never tasted anything so fine. Although he thought later it was not just the berries themselves. Part of it was the incredible clarity of the air. He got a couple of scratches while picking a fourth helping. It was as if the bushes were telling him to lay off. Enough was enough already. He sucked at the deepest of the scratches on the fleshy pad below the thumb, and then headed north along the twin ruts again, moving slowly, trying to look everywhere at once. He paused a little way from the blackberry tangles to look up at the sun, which seemed somehow smaller and yet more fiery. Did it have a faint orange cast, like in those old medieval pictures? Jack thought perhaps it did. And a cry, as rusty and unpleasant as an old nail being pulled slowly out of a board, suddenly arose on his right, scattering his thoughts. Jack turned toward it, his shoulders going up, his eyes widening. It was a gull, and its size was mind-boggling, almost unbelievable, but there it was, as solid as stone, as real as houses. It was, in fact, the size of an eagle, its smooth white bullet head cocked to one side, its fish-hook of a beak opened and closed. It fluttered great wings, rippling the seagrass around it. And then, seemingly without fear, it began to hop toward Jack. Faintly, Jack heard the clear, brazen note of many horns blown together in a simple flourish. And for no reason at all, he thought of his mother. He glanced to the north momentarily in the direction he had been traveling, drawn by that sound. It filled him with a sense of unfocused urgency. It was, he thought, when there was time to think, like being hungry for a specific something that you haven't had in a long time. Ice cream, potato chips, maybe a taco. You don't know until you see it, and until you do there is only a need without a name, making you restless, making you nervous. He saw pennons and the peak of what might have been a great tent, a pavilion against the sky. That's where the Alhambra is, he thought. And then the gull shrieked at him. He turned toward it and was alarmed to see it was now less than 6 feet away. Its beak opened again, showing that dirty pink lining, making him think of yesterday, the gull that had dropped the clam on the rock and then fixed him with a horrid stare, exactly like this one. The gull was grinning at him. He was sure of it. As it hopped closer, Jack could smell a low and noisome stink hanging about it, dead fish and rotted seaweed. The gull hissed at him and flurried its wings again. "Get out of here," Jack said loudly. His heart was pumping quick blood and his mouth had gone dry, but he did not want to be scared off by a seagull, even a big one. "Get out!" The gull opened its beak again. And then, in a terrible, open-throated series of pulses, it spoke, or seemed to.
"Others I-E-N, Ack. Others I-E-N."
"Mother's dying, Jack." The gull took another clumsy hop toward him, scaly feet clutching at the grassy tangles, beak opening and closing, black eyes fixed on Jack's. Hardly aware of what he was doing, Jack raised the green bottle and drank. Again that horrible taste made him wince his eyes shut. And when he opened them, he was looking stupidly at a yellow sign which showed the black silhouettes of two running kids, a little boy and a little girl. "Slow children," this sign read. A seagull, this one of perfectly normal size, flew up from it with a squawk, no doubt startled by Jack's sudden appearance. He looked around and was walloped by disorientation, his stomach full of blackberries and Speedy's pustulant magic juice rolled over, groaning. The muscles in his legs began to flutter unpleasantly, and all at once he sat down on the curb at the base of the sign with a bang that traveled up his spine and made his teeth click together. He suddenly leaned over between his splayed knees and opened his mouth wide, sure he was just going to yark up the whole works. Instead, he hiccuped twice, half-gagged, and then felt his stomach slowly relax. It was the berries, he thought. If it hadn't been for the berries, I would have puked for sure. He looked up and felt the unreality wash over him again. He had walked no more than 60 paces down the cart track in the territory's world. He was sure of that. Say his stride was 2 feet. No, say 2.5 feet, just to be on the safe side. That meant he had come a paltry 150 feet. But he looked behind him and saw the arch with its big red letters, Arcadia Fun World.
Although his vision was 20/20, the sign was now so far away he could barely read it. To his right was the rambling, many-winged Alhambra Inn, with the formal gardens before it and the ocean beyond it. In the territory's world, he had come 150 feet. Over here, he had somehow come half a mile.
"Jesus Christ," Jack Sawyer whispered,
and covered his eyes with his hands.
"Jack! Jack, boy! Traveling Jack!"
Speedy's voice rose over the washing machine roar of an old flathead six engine. Jack looked up. His head felt impossibly heavy, his limbs leaden with weariness, and saw a very old International Harvester truck rolling slowly toward him. Homemade stake sides had been added to the back of the truck, and they rocked back and forth like loose teeth as the truck moved up the street toward him. The body was painted a hideous turquoise. Speedy was behind the wheel. He pulled up at the curb, gunned the engine, boom, 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 and then killed it. Ha! He climbed down quickly.
"You all right, Jack?"
Jack held the bottle out for Speedy to take.
"Your magic juice really sucks, Speedy," he said wanly.
Speedy looked hurt. Then he smiled.
"Whoever told you medicine's supposed to taste good, Traveling Jack?"
"Nobody, I guess," Jack said.
He felt some of his strength coming back slowly as that thick feeling of disorientation ebbed.
"You believe now, Jack?"
Jack nodded.
"No," Speedy said, "that don't get it. Say it out loud."
"The territories," Jack said. "They're there. Real. I saw a bird..."
He stopped and shuddered.
"What kind of a bird?" Speedy asked sharply.
"Seagull. Biggest damn seagull."
Jack shook his head.
"You wouldn't believe it."
He thought and then said, "No, I guess you would. Nobody else, maybe, but you would."
"Did it talk?" "Lots of birds over there do. Talk foolishness, mostly. And there's some that talks a kind of sense, but it's an evil kind of sense, and mostly it's lies."
Jack was nodding. Just hearing Speedy talk of these things, as if it were utterly rational and utterly lucid to do so, made him feel better.
"I think it did talk, but it was like..."
He thought hard.
"There was a kid at the school Richard and I went to in L.A., Brandon Lewis. He had a speech impediment, and when he talked you could hardly understand him. The bird was like that, but I knew what it said. It said my mother was dying."
Speedy put an arm around Jack's shoulders, and they sat quietly together on the curb for a time. The desk clerk from the Alhambra, looking pale and narrow and suspicious of every living thing in the universe, came out with a large stack of mail. Speedy and Jack watched him go down to the corner of Arcadia and Beach Drive and dump the inn's correspondence into the mailbox. He turned back, marked Jack and Speedy with his thin gaze, and then turned up the Alhambra's main walk. The top of his head could barely be descried over the tops of the thick box hedges. The sound of the big front door opening and closing was clearly audible, and Jack was struck by a terrible sense of this place's autumn desolation. Wide, deserted streets, the long beach with its empty dunes of sugar sand, the empty amusement park with the roller coaster cars standing on a siding under canvas tarps and all the booths padlocked. It came to him that his mother had brought him to a place very like the end of the world. Speedy had cocked his head back and sang in his true and mellow voice, "Well, I've laid around and played around this old town too long. Summer's almost gone, yes, and winter's coming on. Winter's coming on, and I feel like I got to travel on." He broke off and looked at Jack.
"You feel like you got to travel, old Traveling Jack?"
Flagging terror stole through his bones.
"I guess so," he said. "If it will help, help her. Can I help her, Speedy?"
"You can," Speedy said gravely.
But...
Oh, there's a whole string of buts, Speedy said. Whole trainload of buts, Traveling Jack. I don't promise you no cakewalk. I don't promise you success. Don't promise that you'll come back alive, or if you do, that you'll come back with your mind still bolted together. You're gonna have to do a lot of your rambling in the territories, because the territories is a whole lot smaller. You notice that?
Yes.
Figured you would, because you sure did get a whole mess down the road, didn't you?
Now an earlier question recurred to Jack, and although it was off the subject, he had to know.
Did I disappear, Speedy? Did you see me disappear?
You went, Speedy said, and clapped his hands once sharply, just like that.
Jack felt a slow, unwilling grin stretch his mouth, and Speedy grinned back.
I'd like to do it sometime in Mr. Balgo's computer class, Jack said, and Speedy cackled like a child.
Jack joined him, and the laughter felt good, almost as good as those blackberries had tasted.
After a few moments, Speedy sobered and said, There's a reason you got to be in the territories, Jack. There's something you got to get. It's a mighty powerful something.
And it's over there?
Yeah, Bob.
It can help my mother?
Her and the other.
The Queen?
Speedy nodded.
What is it? Where is it? When do I...
Hold it! Stop!
Speedy held up a hand. His lips were smiling, but his eyes were grave, almost sorrowing.
One thing at a time. And, Jack, I can't tell you what I don't know, or what I'm not allowed to tell.
Not allowed? Jack asked, bewildered.
Oh, there you go again, Speedy said. Now listen, Traveling Jack. You got to leave as soon as you can, before that man Bloat can show up and bother you up Sloat. Yeah, him. You got to get out before he comes.
But he'll bug my mother, Jack said, wondering why he was saying it. Because it was true, or because it was an excuse to avoid the trip that Speedy was setting before him like a meal that might be poisoned.
You don't know him. I know him, Speedy said quietly. I know him of old, Traveling Jack. And he knows me. He's got my marks on him. They're hidden, but they're on him. Your mama can take care of herself. At least she's gonna have to for a while. Because you got to go.
Where?
West, Speedy said. From this ocean to the other.
What?
Jack cried, appalled by the thought of such distance. And then he thought of an ad he'd seen on TV not 3 nights ago, a man picking up goodies at a deli buffet some 35,000 feet in the air, just as cool as a cucumber. Jack had flown from one coast to another with his mother a good 2 dozen times, and was always secretly delighted by the fact that when you flew from New York to L.A., you could have 16 hours of daylight. It was like cheating time, and it was easy.
"Can I fly?" he asked Speedy.
"No!" Speedy almost yelled, his eyes widening in consternation. He gripped Jack's shoulder with one strong hand. "Don't you let nothing get you up in the sky. You dastard! If you happen to flip over into the territories while you was up there—"
He said no more. He didn't have to. Jack had a sudden, appalling picture of himself tumbling out of that clear, cloudless sky, a screaming boy projectile in jeans with a red-and-white striped rugby shirt, a skydiver with no parachute.
"You walk," Speedy said, "and thumb what rides you think you can. But you got to be careful, because there's strangers out there. Some are just crazy people, sissies that would like to touch you, or thugs that would like to mug you. But some are real strangers, Traveling Jack. They people with a foot in each world. They look that way and this like a goddamn Janus head. I'm afraid they're gonna know you coming before too long has passed, and they'll be on the watch."
"Are they—"
he groped.
"Twinners?"
"Some are. Some aren't. I can't say no more right now. But you get across if you can. Get across to the other ocean. You travel into territories when you can, and you'll get across faster. You take the juice. I hate it."
"Never mind what you hate," Speedy said sternly.
You get across, and you're gonna find a place, another Alhambra. You got to go in that place. It's a scary place, a bad place. But you got to go in.
How will I find it?
It will call you. You'll hear it loud and clear, son.
Why? Jack asked.
He wet his lips.
Why do I have to go there, if it's so bad?
Because, Speedy said, that's where the talisman is. Somewhere in that other Alhambra.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You will, Speedy said. He stood up, then took Jack's hand. Jack rose. The two of them stood face to face, old black man and young white boy. Listen, Speedy said, and his voice took on a slow, chanting rhythm. Talisman be given unto your hand, Traveling Jack. Not too big, not too small, she looked just like a crystal ball. Traveling Jack, old Traveling Jack, you be gone to California to bring her back. But here's your burden, here's your cross. Drop her, Jack, and all be lost.
I don't know what you're talking about, Jack repeated with a scared kind of stubbornness.
You have to know, Speedy said, not unkindly. I got to finish with that carousel this morning, Jack. That's what I got to do. Got no time for any more jaw chin. I got to get back and you got to get on. Can't tell you no more now. I guess I'll be seeing you around, here or over there.
But I don't know what to do, Jack said, as Speedy swung up into the cab of the old truck.
You know enough to get moving, Speedy said. You'll go to the talisman, Jack. She'll draw you to her.
I don't even know what a talisman is.
Speedy laughed and keyed the ignition. The truck started up with a big blue blast of exhaust.
Look it up in the dictionary, he shouted, and threw the truck into reverse.
He backed up, turned around, and then the truck was rattling back toward Arcadia Fun World. Jack stood by the curb watching it go. He had never felt so alone in his life. Chapter 5 Jack and Lily. When Speedy's truck turned off the road and disappeared beneath the Fun World arch, Jack began to move toward the hotel. A talisman. In another Alhambra, on the edge of another ocean, his heart seemed empty. Without Speedy beside him, the task was mountainous, so huge, vague, too. While Speedy had been talking, Jack had had the feeling of almost understanding that macaroni of hints and threats and instructions. Now it was close to just being macaroni. The territories were real, though. He hugged that certainty as close as he could, and it both warmed and chilled him. They were a real place, and he was going there again. Even if he did not really understand everything yet, even if he was an ignorant pilgrim, he was going. Now all he had to do was try to convince his mother. Talisman, he said to himself, using the word as the thing, and crossed empty Boardwalk Avenue and jumped up the steps onto the path between the hedges. The darkness of the Alhambra's interior, once the great door had swung shut, startled him. The lobby was a long cave. You'd need a fire just to separate the shadows. The pale clerk flickered behind the long desk, stabbing at Jack with his white eyes. A message there. Yes. Jack swallowed and turned away. The message made him stronger. It increased him, though its intention was only scornful. He went toward the elevators with a straight back and an unhurried step.
Hang around with blackies, huh? Let them put their arms around you, huh?
The elevator whirred down like a great heavy bird. The doors parted, and Jack stepped inside. He turned to punch the button marked with a glowing 4. The clerk was still posed spectrally behind the desk, sending out his dum-dum's message. Nigger lover, nigger lover, nigger lover, like it that way, eh, brat? Hot and black, that's for you, eh? The doors mercifully shut. Jack's stomach fell toward his shoes. The elevator lurched upward. The hatred stayed down there in the lobby. The very air in the elevator felt better once it had risen above the first floor. Now all Jack had to do was to tell his mother that he had to go to California by himself. "Just don't let Uncle Morgan sign any papers for you." As Jack stepped out of the elevator, he wondered for the first time in his life whether Richard Sloat understood what his father was really like.